You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony. Aaron Lee Gaffel writes The Big Sur Fix, an online journal about art, creativity, and writing. Her new book is Drinking from a Cold Spring, A Little Book of Hope. We could all use that. Thank you for joining me, Aaron.
You're so welcome. It's so nice to be here.
Aaron, this is a really interesting approach to a book on creativity for writers. Tell me how this came about.
I started writing it in pieces. It was really kind of a daily reflection with words that I would begin after walking every morning and before I began my day. I live down in Big Sur, and kind of my transition between waking up is a cup of coffee and a walk about 3 miles or 5 miles down Highway 1 just south of Nepenthe. And when I get back, I just kind of imagine how the day needs to go. And I would sit down and write whatever sort of arose in my mind during that walk, and that began my Big Sur Fix e-letter that I would send out to different people who were part of my life.
Well, now you're both an artist and a writer, so could you talk about reconciling those two different forms of creativity?
Well, you know, for years I really thought I had to choose because I felt like I was kind of battling. I mean, more about managing my time than the desire. I desired to do both, and I was drawn into both, and writing was really my first love. I always had a pen to paper. You know, I write on the back of a newspaper, back of a magazine. I'll write on my arm, you know, cocktail napkins, the back of a book. I mean, it's been something I've done since I can remember, how to put words together, letters together to make words. And drawing and painting really came later. And but there was a point where one of those disciplines began to really require more time and energy, and I abandoned my creative writing and really pushed into painting. But just in the last couple of years, the writing has become really important for me to articulate verbally the process that I'm struggling with visually. So it's become really kind of a combined art form.
That's really interesting. Now, describe where you live to people who aren't really familiar with Big Sur or Nepenthe, because a lot of our listeners are in Poland or the Philippines, so
give them
an idea of what this is like.
Well, I live right in the middle of Big Sur, which is, you know, between Los Angeles and San Francisco, right on the coast, about 800 feet above the Pacific Ocean, in an old log cabin that was built around 1920 or 1925. And the cabin is really as it was in 1920. The logs are huge, you know, trees that were felled on the land and put together. And it's the original floor, the original ceiling. And it's a, you know, wonderful rustic home where I was, you know, raised as a kid. My grandmother raised her family there. And then when we were little kids, we ended up living with our grandmother for many years when we were little. And my grandparents built a restaurant around and below the house. The restaurant is called Nepenthe.
Wow. And
so the house is kind of like the hub mm-hmm. of this really extraordinary place that, as in my memories as a kid, was a place that people from all over the world were coming to, and their jaws would drop when they would walk across the terrace below the cabin, because the view is 40 miles looking south with mountains rushing down to the ocean and waves crashing below, and condors now circle between the canyons. And it's really kind of a fairyland. I mean, you kind of don't believe you're seeing what you're seeing some days. And that's my daily experience. So you really couldn't not become a painter, I think, or a poet, or, you know, something interpretive.
Well, I've been there, and I'll attest, it's a magical place. It's a magical view. Now, in your book, this is describe this book to us, because it's a very interesting, as I say, approach. It's like a series of prose poetry and poetic snapshots of your life. tell us how this came about.
Well, in a way, it's kind of a glorified to-do list, you know?
It's like
each
that.
Chapter is kind of like, what do I do today? How do I organize my day? And what am I thinking about? And what matters? And, you know, there's some really fundamental stuff in this book just about time management. How mm-hmm. do you, when you're an entrepreneur or you know, you're a musician and you're going gig to gig, or you're an artist and you make your life painting to painting, how do you know what matters to focus on? And raising children in the midst of that, and paying the bills, and having parents die, and having the forests catch on fire, and having the roads slide out, and all the things that happen where we live. And how do you not lose your thread and lose your commitment to the creative process? I think every one of us has kind of wanted to throw in the towel on all of it at some point, maybe daily. Mm-hmm. So the writing is really a daily approach. I wrote each piece between one thing and the other. Each chapter is very short. Some chapters are one page long. Some chapters are a poem. When I was really incapable of explaining or understanding, I write poetry. And the poem would be the way that I could take myself to a place of, this is how I'm feeling. This is what it looks like. And no explanation, you know.
One of the things I think that's really wonderful about this book is this kind of, it's really a holistic approach to creativity in a way that I don't think I've seen before, because lots of writing books will focus on the writing process, art books will focus on the artistic process. This focuses on living your life, and mm-hmm. to be honest, living your life takes up most of your time, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really about being a human being, mm-hmm. I think. The best moment for me since publishing the book was coming home and finding my cousin, whose name is Carmel, sitting on she was sitting on the couch in my living room. It was the very first day the book was for sale, and I'd been teaching a painting class in Monterey all day, and I came home and there she was, and she was sitting on the couch underscoring passages in ink on this brand new fresh copy of the book. And I just wanted to know, what are you underlining? What is it that you're reading that means something to you? And Carmel had had a year in which she had lost her father, she'd lost her mother, she'd lost her grandparent, she'd lost her home, her family home had been foreclosed by the bank. She had had a year like nothing that, you know, I mean, it was a year like nothing you could imagine or wish on your worst enemy. And she's 26 or 27 years old. And I thought, I wrote something. I don't know what it is, but I wrote something that actually gave her something in that moment of underscoring the passage. And that feeling of having actually created something of meaning for someone else was all I needed for it to be worth it.
Well, I can imagine. Now, one of the things you talk about in here is that it's you describe the process of creativity as it's a kind of excavation. Could mm-hmm. you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think that really strikes, for me at least, to the mm-hmm. heart of what it's like to try to go ahead and pull something out of yourself and put it down on paper, or I guess paint, though mm-hmm. I don't paint.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's part of the commitment is that you're cracking open a seed, or you're cracking open a hard surface to get under it, to find what's there. Mm. And you really don't know what you're going to find. Doing a writing practice, when you begin to write and you make a commitment that you're going to sit and write without editing or stopping, you don't know where the words will take you. And sometimes they take you places that are places that you've spent your whole life running away from.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Now, could you talk about the part that the family and your emotions play in this book? Because I think there's a really strong theme. I mean, there's some really beautiful writing about your relationship to your father. Mm-hmm. And talk about that and how that leads to lessons in how any of us can pull something out of ourselves that's worth looking at or reading.
Well, It's a very complicated question for anybody, I think, their relationship with their family and how their relationship with their family or certain members of their family inform how they understand themselves. And my father left before I was born. I was born in 1963, and he was a guy, really brilliant guy, who was very influenced by Jack Kerouac. And he had won a scholarship to Columbia, and his first year in college, this was around 1959, he decided to chuck all that and head to California and find the Beats. He wanted to find Allen Ginsberg and Neil Cassidy and check it out. And that's what brought him ultimately to Nepenthe and to meeting my mother. But my dad was really a casualty of that era. And shortly after my parents were married and had their first child, he kind of disappeared and was never really seen much of again. And as a little kid growing up, I was really haunted by wanting to know my dad, and I fantasized that if he came back, everyone would be happy, everything would be good, and those fantasies really propelled me to try to find him. And I did ultimately find him. I found him a couple of times. The first time I found him, I wasn't really ready to know who he was, and I was really afraid. And but I couldn't stop seeking him out. And to tell you the truth, it was one of the great positive changes in my life when I finally did meet him and accept him as who he was, a human being in this world, a really frail guy. And he wasn't a mythical being. He was just a guy. And when that moment happened for me, I feel like I stopped looking over my shoulder and started moving into my life facing forward. And it totally freed me to just live my life in the present tense.
I think that's a really interesting observation that you just made, that you finally saw your father as a human being. I think that this is something we have to learn about ourselves too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're all just, doing the best we can, and here we are in this form and with these gifts and frailties that are part of our whole package. And, we all are struggling. All of us are struggling. We have different things we struggle with. So,
now, one of the things I like about this book is the way that you talk about and think about how our frailties inform our strengths and our art. Could you tell me, you talk about the power of limits, and I think this is a really important part of art, that because you can only, all you have are paints, or all you have, especially with writing, is just words. It's not very much to make something that can be as powerful as, for example, this book.
Well, actually, I think it's really the trick. I learned this from my son, who's a really gifted artist, and when he was very little, he made a comment about, the definition of art being working within limits. And what I don't recall his exact words, but what he said really struck me, that when you give somebody something very specific to work with, they are stimulated to react and create from that limitation. If you give someone 5 minutes to sit down and put their pen to paper and write without stopping, they will find amazing things. I've done this with students. I've done this with myself. And it's unbelievable how just that finite amount of time and this one direction will get somebody to enter into that experience. And it's only 5 minutes.
One of the things I like, too, is that you talk about going into the dark places and looking, you look for resistance. That's where you really find, that's where your artistic muscle is exercised to find something that's worth seeing, worth writing about.
Yeah, it's really challenging. There's a lot of fear that you bump into when you go into those places. And there's a lot of sadness and looking at what you don't understand and just not walking away. The power of some of the, the processes of art making that I have learned, which are giving yourself a period of time in which you are creating. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, I'll give myself my to-do list for the day and it's paint for 4 hours. Well, maybe for 3.5 hours, I'm looking at the canvas, or I'm walking in circles around my living room, or I'm putting down a stroke of paint and then I'm walking away and looking at it and I'm completely thrown. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm doing. But I've made this commitment that I'm going to stick it out. And inevitably, that decision, by just not allowing myself to walk away for, sometimes it's 4 hours, sometimes with writing it's 10 minutes, it keeps me on task to be ready for the glimpse of that thread that I'm going to follow through that dark place. And it's very important to have a discipline in the approach, even if it is a short, being a disciplined artist doesn't mean you have to be spending 10 hours a day, 7 days a week to the exclusion of all other things. It means making a decision and sticking to it about how you're going to approach doing your work.
I really like this idea of the way you approach discipline in this book, because one thing that's really interesting is that the writing is so gorgeous here. It's very poetic, and you really evoke the beauty. But amidst all the beauty, amidst the kind of, and also the visions of your life, just, you know, the everydayness of things mm-hmm. we have to do, just, we have to wash dishes.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We have to do a lot of laundry.
Yeah. And fold it and hang it up and put it in the closet and make sure that the black shirts are on black hangers, because we're particularly compulsive. That said, could you talk about this kind of sense of discipline in the midst of this incredible beauty that you live amongst?
Well, it's interesting. I became an artist around raising my children. My first child was born when I was 19. Mm. And the shape of my art making is the shape of working on the margin and having that 10 minute, that half hour, that 2 hour, you know, moment that you can snatch out of the jaws of the PTA club and the after school sports, chauffeur duty, and the getting the kids up for school and making school lunches and, you know, all of the things that are part of a parent's life. And so as I evolved artistically and professionally, the shape of how I approach my work is really from that experience. Now I have days and weeks where I can dive into projects, which is a completely new experience for me, with my kids both grown and gone and off to school. So I wonder sometimes what it would be like to have come into it from a different place, as many other artists do who are going to art school and creating art practices before they, you know, have their kids and all that. But this is how I came about it. And it's really interwoven with everything I do, from baking bread to washing the dishes to doing the laundry.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about how you, I'm guessing that you probably use the entries in this book as well, as you expect, in much the same way you expect the readers to as well, don't you?
Well, you know, I wrote each of these mm-hmm. passages first for my own understanding, mm-hmm. and then for if I felt they were really valuable, and when I would send them out, get responses from people that said to me, this was a really important piece of writing, it really helped me today. I really began to take more seriously the insights that would pop up mm-hmm. on these morning walks, and really what was what drove me to compile them as a manuscript, as a book. And I do everything in this book. It is a completely honest snapshot of daily practices, or, you know, work practices, ideas, exercises that I use myself.
And as to-do lists go, this is a lot more gorgeous than our average to-do list. The language in here is really beautiful. Could you talk? Did you polish these pieces? Do they just flow off the tip of your pen and you dip them in lacquer and pin them to the wall?
Well, I wrote everything in between other things. Mm. So I would give myself a period of time, usually no more than 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it might stretch into 2 hours, but, I would sit down and I would try to articulate what was going on that particular day. And I would need to bring it, I would do a rough draft, just write it and let the words flow. And then I would go back in and edit it within that hour. Mm. And then I would send it out. So I gave myself it was almost like a game of finding what I'd learned on that walk or what I thought mattered for that day, what piece of information was really going to be important, and try to get it onto the page without caring how it sounded or what it looked like. And then when I felt like I'd said it, go back in and start to craft it so that it worked as something for someone else that would have some grace to it. And then wrap it up and send it out and keep it light in the sense that I wasn't going to overwork these things. I was going to create them and polish them to some degree and then let them go and see where they landed.
One of the things when you're doing this kind of writing, mm-hmm. There's a real, I think, and you really achieve, there's, you need to achieve a balance in terms of showing what you do, but not telling what to do, mm-hmm. to leave room for the reader to draw inspiration and put themselves into your shoes. Could you talk about creating that kind of, about how you achieve that kind of balance as a writer when you're writing this in this form?
Well, I think a trick to this kind of writing, which I really think is a very important insight into why this book works, is that every single passage was written from this moment now. I was never trying to tell a story, usually, constructed novelistically or memoir-esque or in any kind of form that I had read. It was like I just sat down every day and began with, today I went for a walk or washing the dishes. It occurred to me, ... And this was actually something, I've been writing for, most of my life, and I'm 46 years old, so I've got a lot of writing under my belt. But that approach was something I learned with Natalie Goldberg last year on a writing workshop in Taos, New Mexico. And she said, everything begins well when you begin now.
That's a fascinating insight, and I can see that. Now, when you put this book together, mm-hmm. The sequence is really beautiful. And what's nice about it is that you can just read it straight through, mm-hmm. and get a kind of a nice buildup. It's like watching the waves come in,
right.
From Nepenthe. But it's also, I think, a book where you can pick it up. And once you've done that, it's nice that it's rereadable. Mm-hmm. You can pick it up and flip to a page and find something that's going to, it's kind of like a tarot deck. In that sense.
Well, some people read it like they just open it up and they read a passage here and then they close it and they find it a few days later and they read another passage completely out of order. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to make any difference, mm-hmm. whatsoever. And, some people read it in one fell swoop. They buy the book on Monday and come back on Tuesday and they tell me what they thought about it. My mom took about 2 months to mm-hmm. read it, and she was surprised, I think, to like it. Mm-hmm. I was delighted that she did, and she said, I can see why people are buying this for their kids. It's a book that is actually striking a chord with moms who are juggling so many things. And people who are trying to find a way to integrate into their daily work life that may have nothing to do with the passion they feel for poetry or music or writing or painting or what have you. How do you get that in there? And we sometimes think that we have to have that, week off or that year off, a sabbatical or mm-hmm. some huge, impossible, unachievable amount of time to begin to do the work. And we don't. All we need is deciding that it matters enough to give ourselves 10 minutes in any given day.
Now, one of the things I think you convey quite well, and you've spoken of a bit, is the kind of almost chaotic day-to-day existence we live. You know, the family comes, or you've got visitors, or you have to do the laundry, or whatever. Yet, you convey that well in this book. Yet, you live in this almost surreally beautiful landscaping and extremely peaceful. Could you talk about one of the things I think that's great is that you capture the core of that serene beauty and let it kind of percolate up through kind of the busyness that all of us have to experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, Big Sur is truly one of the most extraordinarily beautiful and it's, I'm not sure if it's serene. It has moments of serenity, or it has a quality of really deep peace. It also has this kind of incredible energy and
the wild power of the waves,
the potential,
and the
forest
rocks.
Fires, yeah. And the experience of being so close to with natural disasters being a part of our calendar. You know, you calendar in that the roads will close every winter for a period of time. Up the year my son was born, the road was closed for 13 months.
Holy cow, that must have been...
You know, I mean, I luckily was living in Oregon where I was going to college, so I missed out on all the fun. But, you know, just 10 years ago, we started a nonprofit arts education organization called the Big Sur Arts Initiative, which was in response to a three-month road closure. And that was really about dealing with what happens in a rural, remote community that's hugging the edge of a cliff for 80 miles when both north and south access is gone. How do you keep kids engaged? How do you create school when the teachers all live somewhere else? You know, how do you get all of the needs, the social and educational needs of your children met, you know, from within those who are within those road closures? So the natural beauty and the natural reality of Big Sur is extreme. It's extremely peaceful. It's extremely wild. There's an unbridled energy, and then there's a sense of it being just capped, you know, under it's there. It's always there. You know, the power of it is always there.
Erin Lee Gaffel is the author of Drinking from a Cold Stream, A Little Book of Hope. Thank you for joining me, Erin.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Agony Column News Report, featuring interviews, phone interviews, reports from live book events and festivals, and conversations with readers. You can find additional news, interviews, book reviews, and more 5 days a week at the Agony Column website at trashotron.com/agony.